I appointed it in 2008. Then at the time, we understood that yes, Chair, it is the statistics of rhino poaching.
We started declining from what,
2015.
Yes. So the peak was 2014.
The peak was 2014. But what I'm saying, Chair, is that we started trying to understand this from right at 2008 when we started seeing an increase. And then at that time, on the left there is the structure that for us was the structure of the illegal trafficking of horn, which starts on your level one, I'm sure all of us are familiar with the poaching. And which is local, which is where the source is, and it goes all the way to the buyer, the consumer, who will be sitting offshore, outside our country. On the right is the cartel, that is the way in which the supply chain, the way in which the horn is traded, and then on the right. The little green box there is about what we were trying to do in order to understand better and to get to what could be the reaction that we do towards the managing of the threat towards the rhino in understanding what demand is all about. The next slide, Chair, now that we understood, we knew the structure and we understood the pattern, we then put as a department, specific processes in place. And I'll talk to three at this point. One is the rhino issue management. The rhino issue management was a process that dealt with the polarized engagements around the protection and conservation of South Africa's rhino population. And out of that process, the experts that were the trusted with facilitating this process, and the conservationists themselves, then the analysis came down to recommendations in four critical areas. And it's related to the funding of all activity systems and mechanisms, the safety and security, which included enforcement, threat analysis, etc., the conservation, which will talk to issues of protected areas management, translocation, and so forth, and then, of course, the trade issue. So what these recommendations were saying was, if you want to talk to all deal effectively with the protection of rhino or to combat rhino poaching, you have to look at those four issues or four key areas. Out of that, then the committee of inquiry was formed to specifically look at the trade issue. So we agreed that the inconsistent needs to look at funding. We have to continue with safety and security measures, and of course the biological aspect must continue, but that there is a specific requirement to look deeper into the trade issue in order to understand what is it that we need to do. And I think the issues that the colleague spoke to in relation to the COP17 and yourself, Chair, having been involved in this process, you understand that then the Committee of Inquiry came up with recommendations around five critical areas: biological management, demand management, enforcement, responsive legislation, and community enforcement. What the Committee of Inquiry said to Cabinet, which approved, was that we have to put interventions in place dealing with those five areas in order to be effective in dealing with the demand of rhino, whether legal or illegal. And then, of course, that culminated into the rhino conservation level, and I'll speak deeper into it as we go. Within demand management, we said in order to do demand management, what we have to look at or focus on advocacy, education, and awareness as an underpinning pillar towards the legal and legal trade dimensions that the DG was talking about. So the issue here is that you cannot separate demand from consumption, that there is legal consumption and there is illegal consumption. And in order for one to deal effectively with the demand issues, one has to look at both. You have to look at what drives the legal consumption and what is it that drives the legal consumption before you even look at how it is carried from one point to the other. So that's where our demand chain is focused. It goes all the way from that hierarchy that I showed in the previous slide, it goes all the way from the poacher, who is your source of demand, and then your consumer, who's right at the end. Chair, it says we must look at those two dimensions, and we must focus on information gathering, and then of course we must look at research. And in research, we have to look at evidence-based approach in order to deal with changing and understanding attitudes in the consumer market. It looks at the fact that we must have continued interactions and monitor systems that will be able to inform us if there are any changes. I think advocacy and education and advocacy remain key throughout all those elements. Scientists also looked at specific demand management. Now the scientists understood that this is not a pure, for every crime to be committed, there has to be a consumer. Scientists then said, this is a trade-related issue. Therefore, there has to be specific owners on member states or parties to assist in dealing with this issue. And they then said that there were specific things that needed to be done. Some of them included developing specific strategies to reduce illegal demand for products. And then it also said that we have not yet at that time had a proper understanding of what is it that demand is based on. So we needed to go into an in-depth research and look at all the scientific listed species and write on what included in there. It just treaded on the specific areas that the Committee of Inquiry also highlighted, took into consumer engagement, awareness, and then of course strengthening legislation and enforcement. In terms of the Rhino Lab, those are the five key areas that I've already indicated. But in relation to demand management specifically, there were areas that it was focusing on, or that came out as very key that we needed to intervene in. And it was in relation to research, which talks to issues of consumption. It was talking to investigation that was dealing with the chain, the supply chain, the fact that we have to understand what is happening from where the honey is sourced to where the honey is consumed, so that we can interact effectively or we can intercept effectively and disrupt the chain, and then of course targeted messaging in order to influence perception. So these are some of the key research areas. We needed to understand, or it says that we need to understand exactly what the consumer markets are. So we know that the consumer market is there because our hunting is directing us that way. So we know that there is a consumer market. But we also need to understand what is it about stockpile destruction? What is the actual impact? What are the implications of destroying stockpile? What are we saying when we are destroying stockpile? And how is that managed? How do we monitor whether what has been destroyed is everything that we had or everything that has been located? What has been the impact of the successes or the successes of these campaigns that have been run in consumer countries? And then of course, what drives the price of rhino horn? Chair, honorable members, I think in the rhino issue management process, there was a concept called rhinonomics. It was the concept of the economics of rhino horn. It was talking about the basic law of demand and supply and how the one affects the other. And the research is that we need to continue to look at that area to say when what happens, what changes. If it has got to do with the buying power of the consumer market, or what has it got to do? Has it got to do with the strength of the currency that the price of oil is based on? But we have to continue to research in that area so that we continue to understand demand. We also said that we saw that we have challenges, and that one of the challenges is that there have been studies that have been commissioned, but these studies were not commissioned by the government. Therefore, this information remains secondary to government. And some of the key things that were challenges to us were the fact that the credibility of the studies were not known because we were not in control of this research, so we would not be able to attest for the credibility of information. Because we wouldn't know whether this was biased to the agenda of the owner or of the consumer. So the credibility we cannot vouch for. There's limited access to information. So people will only, especially consumers, they're very secretive and will protect knowledge as part of their traditional practices or their traditional beliefs. So there's limited access to information. There has to be a level of trust that is established before information can be divulged. So there is no government commission study or research in understanding the consumption of rhino horn. So the research would then have to focus on four key areas. Those are the questions on the left. It has to talk to the different segments of consumers, whether for recreational, medicinal, or luxury use, which we have come to establish. But that needs to be tested. It will talk to, as I said, the stockpile. What does it say about consumption, and what is the message that is being sent with the destruction? And then it talks to the lack of knowledge of the outcomes of the campaign. So when campaigns are being run, what is it that we know? What is it that comes out of them? And what will be the best practices or lessons that are coming out of those campaigns? And then, of course, the last one talks to the traditional practices and buying power, whether there is a sufficient social economic potential for us to be able to trade in horn or fulfill that demand. Chair, I think this slide is one of the most interesting slides, and that it puts things into context from a very layman's point of view. You see, if we look at what we have been saying about rhino horn, what we are saying, that is what is written on the top line there. It says, when we communicate, when we say, this is the number of rhino horn, what is actually being heard from these, some of the researchers, is that there is a product, is that rhino horn is available. When we say that this is the number of rhino poached, then the more it rises or everything increases, we actually say it might be getting easier for one to obtain rhino horn. When we say that the price of horn is high, then we are saying there is money in it. So if you go and poach, you will have access to that money. When we say that millions of users, we are confirming that they're in the market. When we say that the rhino horn is going extinct, you might be pressing a panic button to say to poachers, you need to run and get the last of stock, so it's like an end of sale, end of range sale. So that's the kind of messaging, dangerous messaging that we could be communicating. But then there is, you see, that is like an activity. I'm not too familiar with the car, but that looks to me like an engine. It looks like something that runs that says there is a link between producers and consumers. It says on the ground there are poachers, but that in Asia there are users, and that there needs to be consistent linkages of that supply chain in there through messaging. So on the bottom of the slide is what we need to be communicating. We need to say that they are well managed by the population. So what we should be releasing are the results of our protected areas management, are the results of our biodiversity management plan, and that would then be saying to the recipients that it's not easy to get home because it's well managed. It's well controlled. If we say that poachers are getting caught and that they are sentenced and that their assets are being forfeited, we are saying it is not worth the risk. The consequences are dire, so don't go away. If we say there are heavily guarded areas, we say stay out, otherwise we might not come back and we will not be held responsible. We are saying you do not use illegal medicine because it has not been tested. So we are saying to you, use sustainable and legal medicine. And if we say that rhino horn will not go extinct, then we say not on our watch, then we say it's not a good investment for you to go into it because it will remain there for time of perpetuity. These are some of the messages that we say we need to continue and we need to encourage out there. We are saying that rhino will not go extinct. Most of them talk to the previous slides that I've been talking to, including some of the things like the top right, it's a rhino horn that was drawn by a child in a rhino competition. So this is the kind of messaging that that we are encouraging. In coming up with these messages, we use a metric together with our experts, especially those that have been engaging with the consumers in consumer countries. We are saying there's four critical things that we need to do. We must inform the source on the importance and value of the rhino horn, okay, which means that we are saying to them why is it important for the horn to remain on the live animal and for the live animal to continue to exist. We are saying we need to maintain with our partners and NGOs and NPOs and researchers, as well as public figures, in order for them to remain our voice and that the impact for them will be high. We are saying on the left bottom corner that we need to raise awareness. So we need to separate fact from fiction, which is why it's important to even go into research about the medicinal properties of the rhino horn. So they need to know what is it that is legitimate and what is it that's not legitimate. Although the impact might be low, but we believe it will be there. And then of course at the end, on the bottom right, high impact, we are saying that we need to continue or to engage to change mindset of poachers and of community groups. We believe that demand is driven from the people in our communities, especially those that are peripheral to our protected area. Because if they don't go in there to poach with their knowledge, then there will not be a product available for the consumers to buy. Sure, honorable members, these are the summary of the challenges in relation to demand management as we understand them in the department. Is that the research process, of course, requires funding because it must be extensive and it must be credible. So it must go out to the target groups that have been identified, the consumers, as well as the poachers in the communities where something happens. There must be an established methodology, which means it must be done professionally and in a structured manner. Information must be legitimate, it must be credible, and then we must continue sharing information, which is always or not such an easy thing to do. There is a lack of diplomatic solutions. We say not necessarily diplomatic solutions, but common diplomatic solutions. And by that we say, as South Africa, we might be saying you cannot ban the trade of horn in the country, but in China, they might say you can, you know, import horn. So we need to come to a common understanding diplomatically without necessarily undermining sovereignty of other states. Having understood these challenges as a department, we then went into a process of coming up with intervention. Chair, I think in the previous, this slide you have seen in the previous presentation as well. In the space of trying to understand what the legal rules are, we used the legal rules as a basis because we needed to understand legitimately where the legal rules exist. And I think my colleague spoke to the legal rules. We've established we have key four specific destination groups. We have North America, we have Europe, we have the Middle East, and then of course East Asia.
Something closer to the horn should be a tusk, elephant tusk. So why don't we go to Japan and China? Which is the other one closer to that?
A pangolin.
Where is pangolin?
It's in the main ivory. It's in the main ivory.
So there's no pangolin because there's no trade in it.
There is no legal trade. So this is a legal rules.
I'm talking about the legal rules. Something closer to that is the ivory, which goes to China and Japan.
It's not an exclusive list. Honorable Chair, this is the mostly traded. We just provide a few. But these are the mostly traded species. to different rules, but they from the enforcement illegal anti.
So this is what you issue the permit and get the traders.
Yes.
But we know that right or wrong, this light may not be indicative of the demand and the countries that could sue right or wrong, because it is in the Asian countries, but we know it's Vietnam and those other countries.
Okay,
you're coming to that.
We just wanted to show that we discussed some stuff so that the credibility of these targets or our targeting is not questioned. So we use this as a basis. This chair just said that the previous slide was on animals and this is on plants. Okay? The essence here is that from a law enforcement point of view, we know that as long as there is an established route, anything can be trafficked. So it's not something that we can overlook. So it's important for us to even consider doing some of this, and you'll see how they all come together so much better. This in the context of legal trade means that you know that there is a rise in revenue generation from hunting. But for illegal trade it might be meaning, remember the messages in that slide of messaging. It might be saying there is growth, there is commercial value, whether legal or illegal, there is commercial value continues on demand. Having understood that there is that route, we then went and partnered with these, some of them other government partners and entities, regional groups, and even signed MOUs with these specific countries. And this is the basis. So, in looking at the trend, we for Rhino Hunt, we have come up to four specific groupings of groups. They are Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and then what we call random and repeat. On the slide, sir, you will see that there's Vietnam and Bangkok as main destinations. But that there are those European destinations or transits that are being used to get to Europe. The essence here is that there is little time, commonly below 5 hours, for transiting from Oa Tambo to Bangkok going through London, for an example, because it does not provide the airline staff with, or the process with, sufficient time to thoroughly search all the baggage. Because when they are being transported, then they get prioritized. So the checking is not as thorough as it would be if this luggage was taken through to cargo. And the risk is not with the carrier because then it's not hand luggage. So when you move with your hand luggage, it must be checked, but you are only with it. Therefore, if something is picked up in that luggage, it's yours, it cannot be questioned. But if it's checked in, it's easy for one to sit there themselves and not go and collect. So that is the trend. That is the model that is being used there. And that is what really led us to targeting Vietnam and targeting Bangkok. That is also based on the bus that we have encountered in those routes. Therefore, in Europe, in the European route, the two critical areas or the high destination for illegal wildlife is in Vietnam and in Bangkok. The next slide, this is Africa. In Africa, those are the five common transit areas. So, the name is Schiphol. It's Zurich, Frankfurt, Istanbul. So I think late last year there was a big bus coming from Istanbul. And then there's a Paris, which is not so popular, but they have big bus. And the time, I think, amongst all five, the Paris route is the shortest to Vietnam. Then there's the London Heathrow route, which goes to Bangkok. Chesterton link, a very strong link between OR Tambo, you see. OR Tambo provides a link through London to both Bangkok and Vietnam. And several times it has happened that as a passenger is designated for Bangkok, they get to London, they change their route to Vietnam. So that has also happened, but it provides the same result. It gives one the same kind of result. It takes them to either of the two popular destinations. This slide, the same concept, but this is Africa. It also lifts out Bangkok and Hong Kong. Through Nairobi, through Cairo, through Mauritius, through Addis, and then through the Reunion Islands. So there are those five key areas that the department we then are saying it's important for us to start engaging even with those countries. Then we have an MOU with Kenya. We are partners with Egypt. We engage consistently with Ethiopia through the African Union. And we will be addressing Mauritius and Reunion. So even though these are not so hectic as the European ones, but there is an established trend in those as well. The third route is the Middle East. So the route goes through to Doha, to Vietnam, from OLTR through to Dubai to Vietnam, and then from Abu Dhabi to Vietnam. This one, all of them also, similar to the previous one, it can either take them to Bangkok and Vietnam, and it's very easy for travelers to change and switch routes whenever the other one feels hot. So they can choose from switch from going to Bangkok and they can just redirect to Vietnam. This one shares, there are direct flights from OR Tambo, for example, to China, but you get them more rapid. So these flights along, there is no transiting, but when the person gets to China, they pick up, and if it's hot, they just don't pick up. There's a bus happens, but there is no one attached to the baggage. Very often, right from OR Tambo, the parcels are registered in a wrong name. Some of them will be couriered by a person who is not a traveler. They pay cash so you can't trace back the money. The address is fraudulent, the name is fraudulent, and the address on the other side is normally fraudulent except for the person that knows that they have to pick up. So this is the trend that we have established. And so it also reaffirms the destinations. They are normally distant to Vietnam and to Laos. So this is how we have done our targeting, and this is why we are convinced that our demand is based in those countries. And it is on the basis of that analysis that we went for those countries to start partnering with them. We understand that in this chain, in the chain, there has to be an awareness by law enforcement agencies. So we ran a law enforcement awareness session in our intervention. We engaged with the port operators. I think one of the successes of this one was the Hong Kong, the big Hong Kong task. This is also part of the awareness that we are raising. Traffic as a partner, and I'm nearing my conclusion here, has undertaken a study. Now Traffic is an NPO, we're struggling to even define what they are, but they are a good partner of fighting, and they have undertaken a study. And their study says that one has to do motivation mapping. We need to understand what is it that consumer behavior is about in order for us to successfully combat the consumption of illegal wildlife, but specifically in Vietnam. And we choose this because if you look at those slides there, obviously if we are able to affect this or combat this in Vietnam, we shall have dealt with a lot because it features in almost all the routes. They studied the dynamics of demand in five areas. or it came out to say the dynamics of consumer behavior is based on five things: the emotional aspect, the functional aspect, your financial situation, the spiritual aspect, and the cultural aspect. The red ones on the bottom are almost intangible and very difficult to control. Therefore, they have articulated a process that they recommend if we want to augment consumer behavior. And that process entails identifying what is the behavior, what is the augment segmentation, those segments that I spoke about, the recreational, the luxury, and the medicinal. They say multimodal behavior, understand what behavior is about. You need to understand what is the marketing framework. What are we saying about the horn? What is the attraction that we are putting out there or that is being put out there about the horn? And then, of course, we then come up with the actual initiative implementation. So we actually go down. If it's about changing perceptions, we do that. If it's about community empowerment, we do that. If it's about disrupting the supply chain, that's what we do. It's got specific recommendations that are directed at both South Africa and Vietnam, being the common partners, and standard analysis. I must say here that the same analysis that we did with our customs officials and the ACSA is exactly what all that traffic is agreeing with that analysis. The recommendations are that we need to continue. All of these things that you see there, I calculated in five of those areas that we have dealt with in the Rhino Conservation Net. They continue to also put onus on Vietnam. And they also say Vietnam itself needs to promote demand reduction activities because we can manage demand, and because we are changing, we would be conflicted to say we are reducing totally. But then it is Vietnam that understands the exact consumer patterns and the consumer behavior in their country, and that they must take efforts to promote the reduction of demand, especially for illegal consumption of horn. Chair, I think it is here where not yet. So the next slide, Chair, says that they then request that the standing committee on crisis that took place on 1-5 October, this is the recommendation that they sent through. And the standing committee then agreed to these three things. They said the secretariat must contract a consultant to develop crisis guidelines of demand reduction strategies in order to avert illegal demand. Especially of the scientific listed species, which obviously include rhino and manor horn. They say that they must review the guidelines developed and make recommendations for consideration by COP19, and that is specifically in relation to that decision that we spoke to earlier that talks about what strategies need to be developed to reduce demand. And then they also acknowledged and appreciated the role that NGOs are playing on demand management in consumer countries, which for us then means that it's important for us to continue partnering with NGOs if we want to be successful in implementing this intervention. This is just more of what we have done in the country and what the benefits have been. So the focus on air movement has given us that analysis, but it also allows us to advise specific structures like the local authority security committee, where all law enforcement agencies plus the airport company South Africa sits, and we advise operations, we establish possible transit routes as indicated there, we are able to disrupt effectively, there's a lot of bugs that we are getting, and then ultimately we enhance policy. We are then in the process of developing a rider research strategy, which will focus on those key areas, the value of the horn, what is it once the horn has been refined, what are the alternative options of refinement, if there are options and if they are viable, what are the volumes of illicit trade. Now that we've mentioned, we know what is being trafficked illegally, what is it that is being trafficked illegally, and what will it take, what are the timelines that it alternative. Chair, just as a parting shot, this was an engagement in the Kruger National Park. This is a group of kids that came from Mozambique. These kids are coming from the areas that are rhino poaching crime infested on the margins of some of them inside the Limpopo National Park because they have not yet been resettled, including Mazingi. These kids were taken into Kruger National Park and they were taught more about conservation in an attempt to get them to appreciate more conservation and the benefits of conservation and also trying to get them to become conservationists themselves in order to steer them away from illegal poaching activity, illegal or poaching activity. They engaged with management and conservationists. They also engaged with their counterparts in South Africa. And there were good results that came out of their kids made. They made friends, they are engaging, they were put on apps that will teach them more about what conservation is about and what are the benefits of core protection of wildlife and what does it mean for them to be core protectors of wildlife. And it was a very successful and very emotive exercise. And there will be more of this coming. I think the next one is coming in November 2018 because we want to kill the market for recruitment of poachers from this youth in this community. In conclusion, Chair, I think just tracking on the recommendations of the standing committee, we will continue to try to understand what demand management is about. We will address the recommendations from the Rhino Lab as much as we possibly can. We will continue with the partnership with IDA as I indicated, and we will continue to monitor international reports, especially as we have not yet commissioned our own research as a country. So, Chair, that is what we as a department have to say about the land management. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So how does the people who work in the port, in the airport, detect the rhino? How does it get detected? Is it through the machine or through the physical switching of the bags?
Chair, there are scanners, special scanners that have been procured that are located especially in Overstrap International Airport. Now they go on the same principle of the scanners that are at the airport. They measure the density and those scanners have been built to be sensitive to the density of wildlife products because they are different from other products. So there are special scanners that are at the airport that are being used to scan luggage in order to detect wildlife products.
And in other countries in Europe, those transits?
I think it's in Frankfurt that we have, not in all the countries, but the reason we are following those five countries is so we can start having a uniform approach to detection with those countries because we've established that they are transit countries. So some of them use the same kind of scanner, but not all of them.
Okay. Members, we have got 30 minutes to engage with the presentation. What I expected to get from this presentation is something that points to the future. After having understood the market, the consumer market, the supply chain, the poaching trends and everything else, and basically come to the way forward, how then do we deal with after having dissected the problem? What is the ultimate solution? What exactly are we going to do going forward? There is an issue of stockpiles. We have not spoken to that, except to say that in Kenya and I don't know which countries where they encourage the banning of the stockpiles. We have got our own stockpiles. Of course, you may not want to indicate the value of the rhino horns in the stockpiles, but what is the ultimate solution about those stockpiles? Are we going to keep on piling them there? What ultimately is going to happen? So this is the conversation that I thought we needed to have now, to say what is going to be the ultimate solution, because the numbers keep on going up. We were told by some parts that there are more poachers who are arrested before they do the actual poach or they kill the animal. So you can see that the activity is increasing of poaching. That is met with a concomitant response on the side of the conservation authorities. The rangers are getting more vigilant. The technology that is helping them to combat the activity. But ultimately, what will be the end game? What's going to happen? Because there is a market somewhere, and I'm not sure what are the demands in that consumer market. We were told that as more of those societies, standard of living is going up, the more the demand there, because some of these things are beliefs which are so well rooted, historical, generational, some of them. How do we suddenly stop people who have been believing in something from one generation to the next? Whether it is possible that it can be done. So that is and those kind of issues did not come out very clear, except that I see there's a need for more research. But I'm happy that the numbers are going down. What I'm not sure of is what makes the numbers go down. Is it the increase in or more investment that is being done in protecting the conservation areas, Kruka and other places? Or is it because of the fact that there is no longer demand for that? So those dynamics is something that we cannot be quite sure about. But what we know is that our rangers are getting more vigilant. We know that there is increasing technology. Somebody else was demonstrating to us the real time they can monitor the fences. That's like when poachers are going in. Maybe something that could make the demand go down. But whether that trajectory will continue to be on its line, we never know. So, okay. I'm making comments, but I'm also posing questions as I go along, so you must write down and answer. Honorable Khadele, Honorable Pedel, and Honorable Makoya.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was also expecting to get more clarity on how far is the department in implementing the recommendations of the Committee of Inquiry, as well as the outcomes of the Rhino Lab. Further to that, Chair, I was also expecting to hear from the presentation how far is the department in ensuring that in each province there is a dedicated prosecutor, or in ensuring that there is a dedicated prosecutor to deal with the issues of wildlife crime, or especially around the hotspots? Those were my expectations, Chairperson. Maybe if the department will give us more clarity, where are they currently? Because we need to make sure that, I mean, law enforcement is beefed up, and prosecution as well it takes place. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. You covered me on a couple of things there, but I'd just like to add, you also mentioned research, this is the word that came up. Slides 9 and 11 deal with research, priority research areas. Number 11 is 4 areas, key areas. And then there was mention of the USAID traffic report summarizing research. I don't know who's research. And then you ended the presentation saying that that you're not commissioned, that's not commissioned our own research as a country. So I'm a little bit unclear on this research, because if you're not commissioned our own research as a country, who's doing the research? And who's driving it, and the timing and the progress of it? It's quite an important question.
Just one issue regarding or related to the partnerships. You talked of the lack of common diplomatic solution or perspective around these challenges. But with regard to the partnerships that are more at the regional level, and you know, went on to cite particular countries in the region and so on. But with regard to those countries where there's a market for consumption, there seems to be no move or attempts for those. What may be the challenges? If you have attempted, what are the difficulties? Are they in an attitude against, or they seem to be willing to arrive at some common understanding with regard to how we can manage the development or the market for this kind of right now?
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to ask, is there any communication with the other SADC countries with this demand reduction? Because, you know, we might see a slight decrease here. There are many reasons why you asked for an explanation. But is there any correspondence, communication with others to see what the trends are in the other SADC countries? I think we should know that.
Okay, there was a, just lastly from my side, there was a study by the Bonfrey Foundation on the lion bone trade. And that study was pointing out that the illicit market for the rhino or the lion bone trade is using, although it's a legal market, it's allowed, but they're also using this. The illicit market is also feeding into that legal market. So now the PR, what is it? PDR or PR? Lao PR?
PDR.
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 Yeah. Yes, Lao PDR. Now, some of these criminal syndicates have sort of piggyback on that legal market for the live bull trade. It's a very strong statement that has been made there. Some of the known criminal syndicates, the top ones that are suspected of this live rhino on illicit market, they are also using that the land bull trade. So that land bull trade, that legal market, is feeding the illicit market. That's almost like the conclusion that was made by the Bond Free Foundation, and I'd like you to comment on that as well.
Thank you, Chair. As honourable members, I think in terms of future plans, Chair, we have structured our interventions in the Rhino Conservation Plan. And I think we are saying that we have the three key areas, some of which overlap with the other four out of the five that have been outlined by the Committee of Inquiry. And for example, if we look at the messaging, we already have a rhino communication strategy that we have put in place. We are having the initiatives that I spoke to at the end is part of the community empowerment and promotion of ownership, which should have an influence on demand. So we have realized that we might not be going straight into what we call demand management interventions, but out of especially the responsive legislation, community empowerment, enforcement. Some of them have got big impact on demand management. But the rhino reset strategy is part of what we will commission as our own departmental study. Honorable Pardon posed a question on who commissions the study. I think in that slide I did indicate we are aware of the study, we follow them and we interact with them. In the slide, I indicated who undertook these studies, and so we interact with these specific partners. Those are the partners. So those are the people that undertook the study. And through the RIDO research process, which we outlined in the RIDO conservation map, we are going to also be commissioning, because, as I said, one of the challenges is that we cannot vouch for the credibility of these studies as a country such that we will be able to provide specific affirmation on what the outcomes of these are. So these are people that direct the study, and we will be commissioning our own future RIDO strategy, for which the framework has already been developed. We have a RIDO communication strategy, which will be looking at managing perceptions, and it has already started doing that. We are on community empowerment, and part of the co-management agreement mechanisms also looked at reducing illegal demand or demand from our communities who unfortunately get into poaching. There is a question: how do we suddenly stop the increasing demand in buyer countries whose buying power continue to rise? I think, Chair, when I interacted with the subject in the RIDO issue management process, it was at the end a very economic concept where it was saying it is a simple law of demand and supply, and that when the one rises, the one will fall, and that is not necessarily that the buying power is controlled or will control whether there is demand. or not, but that for as long as there is an increase in buying power from consumers, we can expect that there is going to be demand that will increase. And I think perhaps my deputy minister's knowledge of economics will assist me there. But that's really what has been thrashed out in the Rhino issue management process, to say it is a very technical but very critical area, that when we go into the trade, especially when we come into the determination of the price, if we should get there, that is the aspect that we should look at. So you're quite correct, it does influence whether there will be demand or not. But as to whether we can do anything as a country to influence the buying power, I think that it is the last question. And then there's a question, communication with other SADC countries. Yes, there has been a communication with, especially Mozambique, and we meet very, very regularly with them, because that is where the biggest problem came from. And to an extent that I think except for the destruction of the stockpile, we have been speaking in one voice. And as I said, we cannot necessarily influence what the sovereignty, what the country should or shouldn't say, but we have had engagement. In terms of the consumer countries, Honorable Makube, we have signed an MOU with, for example, the Lao PDR, as you said, but we have not had any cooperation from the country further than that. And we depend on their cooperation. We've been trying to engage our embassy in Thailand to get them to start talking to us. The key thing there is that we want to be able to run, especially awareness programs. We respect that it is at their liberty to decide how to deal with the transgressions, but in terms of speaking in one language, we have established where the demand is, but we are aware that our influence might be limited, respecting the sovereignty of that country. So yes, there are challenges, and we continue to attempt in every forum that we have, especially in the multilateral, to try and engage the colleagues, specifically Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. Those are the key countries that we are still trying to partner with strongly, and we believe if we can break through on those of these three countries, then we'll be able to make a big impact. Thank you.
Just on a few more other issues, I think the space of stockpiles is a big issue. At the moment, we don't have a policy like what Kenya had on their stockpiles, and also Mozambique, including the DRC, Ethiopia as well. We have two types of stockpiles in South Africa, unlike those countries. Two types of the owners, got government stockpile and private sector stockpile. The effort that we put in place was that the stockpile in private hands needs to be registered. That's why we put that movement process, working with the University of Pretoria. The horses that are there must be marked, the DNA must be taken, and they must be registered in the national database. That whole process is continuing. To make sure that everyone is accounted for, including the necessary possession permits that need to be there, so no one must have a horn without the horn being known that this person has a horn of what weight and is marked properly, and there is a registration of the marking process supported through also the regulations or the nonsense standards that we have. So that is in the management side of it. And then the government stockpile then also can be accounted for to an extent that working as a collective, even with provinces, there's a particular arrangement that we have to make sure that those ones are accounted for. It's costly to manage. So that's where we are at the moment. You've raised, Chair, there's always been this question: does legal trade influence or fuel illegal trade or fuel demand? Or is the other way around? There's one free study that the Chair is referring to as well. These questions keep on being asked. When we put a moratorium there to say there's no legal trade in rhino horn, internationally as well, with sightings also, commercial trade not allowed. Without any legal trade whatsoever, in 2007 or so, the trend has been with or without legal trade. The demand may still be there, and people try to find ways to meet the demand, legally or illegally. To an extent that there are other studies that argue that if you then are working on the demand supply demand equation, if you make things available into the space, does it make the price lower? Does it make the price higher? Does it? So the impact with what happens illegally, whether it's independent of whether there is trade or legal trade or non-legal trade, is another question. While we respect the study has put through, there are other studies that also concluded that the lion bone trade, they couldn't detect any link between illegal trade and lion bone trade arising from South Africa. I was trying to keep the reference to there are, if you look at the nuances coming from the studies in the traffic, right? Boards of contention. Also, I was trying to look at the specific areas of the nuances, because what we're also interested in was, can we conclusively say that the legal trade in some of the commodities has a direct impact, or it's the cause of the illegal activities on the side? We couldn't pick that up. Am I interpreting it properly? I'm trying to make sure that, Chair, we don't have it.
That's something from traffic.
Let me get that study and indicate the source, so that we don't miss any comments.
Because I know that there was a gentleman from traffic that you wanted us to invite there to the colloquium to speak to that.
Yes.
The bonds of contention report that they produced.
Yes.
But you know, in the Bond-Free Foundation, there are even specific names of traders who have received licenses to export the bones, the lion bones. And those specific individuals, they are very shady individuals who are suspected of being the kingpins, you know, the ringleaders in the rhino illicit market. But anyway, proceed with that, because it's something that I thought that, you know, it was indisputed, especially when it comes to the naming of those individuals in the Bond-Free Foundation report. I don't know whether the Bones of Contention is speaking about the same thing or what, but anyway, proceed.
The Bond of Contention may not be talking about specific names, but Chair, you may be right in that there are people who acquire things legally and they use them for illegal purposes. Those things do happen. So there are people who get permits for certain things, and beyond that they use what they got the permit for other things, where the law enforcement agencies have to take their own course. I will specifically look at the studies. I'm not contesting, Chair, whatsoever, what you're saying. I'm saying, on both sides, there are people who are saying that legal, that's why in the international space now, which gets us worried, there are people who are saying, stop the demand, whether legal or illegal. meaning that there shouldn't be any trade whatsoever with any specimens or with species of animals. That is the part that, I don't want to say as Africa, developing countries, I think we need to look at it very, very closely. Because the wave is going to say across the board, whatever it may be, no trading at all. Whether it's crocodile, whether it's this, whether it's that, any specimen or human species, let there be there, a non-consumptive kind or approach to sustainable use should be the one. So, which presents its own dynamics. Whether it solves the problem or it doesn't solve the problem is another matter. We have set up, I think, you raised the question on research. We set up a team. We may have come up late in the process, working with rhino specialists, including the MIM, which is rhino, not to read my one, this Southern one, where Vice Knight was. RMG, Rhino Management Group, and others. They are specialists into that. They are specific research areas now in that plan to be rolled out, and that will be very, very helpful for us. Yesterday I sat in a meeting with the funding that we received from Jeff, that is also going to assist in this space to the tune of close to $5 million. For the next 5 years. So there are specific areas that we're targeting to also advance this work, working with other countries. So there's a network of different countries in the auspices of the World Bank network. Mozambique, Zambia, and many other countries as well, involve 19 countries all over the world, which will assist in the process. The memorandum of understanding that we signed with Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, China, deal with a number of areas that we diplomatically need to continue to talk to. When they come, when we go, we reflect on these matters. Concerns that we have may not be in the same scale as they have. They have their own. So that partnership will still continue. We do work with certain countries, as she has indicated, even in the planning around strategies and also planning around specific areas. We've got an arrangement, which Paul was also part of, on the management of BCAT. How do we deal with the permitting and the management of leopards and others? We've got arrangements of this and arrangements of that. So we do continue to communicate, but I think that what Honorable President was raising was that as we also keep the trend and record the trend and communicate the trend, they could also replicate the same so that we could have a comparative analysis of what's going on. I think we need to, they may not be at the same scale as we are when it comes to certain aspects of the statistics. And even the technologies that we are using, but I think it will be worthwhile as well, even along those lines. I think that will be useful. There's something that's got to do with the COI. She did speak to that. We took the COI recommendations into the Rhino Lab to translate them into activity selection. That's what we continue to work with at the moment. You wanted to say something? You called?
Just to add on the relationship within SADC around the rhino number to ensure that we're monitoring what is happening within the SADC community. There is a structure under SADC called the Rhino and Elephant Security Group that specifically keeps it. They meet, I think, twice or so in a year, and they update their poaching numbers, population sizes. That's where fun facts from our side, the DS is there, all the 9 provinces sit on that structure. And all the different other countries also sit on that structure. That structure then reports and considers the report and submitted to the ICN, which later reports the time to all the ICN meetings. So by then we'll have a view of what is happening within our neighbors and also within our country in terms of poaching and the steps around that. It's an important structure because we are currently moving a lot of rhinos between South Africa to Namibia. So their population is increasing from, as they are seen as a more secure country. So we're monitoring that in that respect.
Thanks. I think the other question maybe reminding me that there was a question on hotspot areas on the Okadale. You wanted to know what we are doing there. We have been saying in dealing with the rhino demand issues, they must be soft approaches and hard approaches. And I agree that the hard approaches is the enforcement, arrest, prosecution, and that. But that there are soft approaches, which is what we concentrate on when we're dealing with issues of demand. We have identified about 11 to 14 hotspot areas. We have certain criteria where we say if a village or a specific area meets these criteria, then it can be regarded as a hotspot. If there's a specific continued arrest, if there's identification of kingpins, if there is a sudden growth of development, infrastructural development, we go into that with our SAPS partners. And when we do community empowerment and ambassadorship and facilitated liaison programs like we would with the environmental programs, those are the areas in which we focus. We concentrate on those. We would then say, well, having gone through this process of assessing the security or threat level of a village as a contributor towards the poaching, we would then direct deployment of environmental protection, of the community facilitation, of building of advocacy and awareness creation in those specific hotspots. So that is what we are doing when you know, once we've identified these hotspots. So we have not also, we continue with the prosecution, the dedicated prosecutor, PRA. We have seen improvements and good progress, specifically in the one within Skukuza in the Kruger National Park. So that is the kind of relationship. But that, as we get the land restitution process, we also then try and couple that with that to say, when we go into that process, we must observe if that includes any hotspot area. We then put specific emphasis on the facilitation, understanding that there would be challenges that would want to counter that process because they would want the illegal trade to thrive. So that is what we do with that.
Perhaps I might have missed it, but I think you have not spoken to the capacity of the subject countries and the particular that argument. We may be the main target, but I think we do need to know that whether these other countries around us, they do have the necessary capacity or they're evaluating or building capacity in that regard.
I think the capacity differs, Chair. The Mozambique has its own areas of focus that we are also working with them on a formal process, even where we also do joint operations. To an extent that we going over and crossing over and coming beside the certain protocols as well, which are very, very useful also. Zimbabwe does have its own capacity, but we do have an MOU with them as well. Namibia prioritizes this very highly as well, and they do have their own level of capacity that is also recognized. Botswana, very well capacitated with the army also involved. You also have Swaziland that also takes the matter of rhino very seriously. I think their laws are very firm on a number of aspects. So there are different capacities depending on the advanced in certain aspects of technology on some areas, but they also rely a lot more on their defense capabilities, defense forces, or the soldiers in their own spaces in dealing with most of these issues. A bit different in approach from us. As much as we work with defense, work with the police, work with justice and others, we do have the mandates are different. That's why at the front line you will always have rangers in the main, which does have its own dynamics as well.
I think just to add there on what Deji was saying is that there is good coordination coming through the Rhino Specialist Group from Tanzania. I think that's one country that we are learning from in terms of dealing with a coordinated approach. But also to say, where we have not, for instance, had direct memorandum of agreements, we will be going into our TSPA forums like the South Africa, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, the Greater Limpopo Transfrontier Park Forum. That is where we engage with those three countries. And as we make progress in the one country, we try and include others that we need to put in. And I think that the strategy so far has been working because we have been also able to mobilize resources through those funding by crafting common proposals so that we can reinforce capacity in the areas that we see as needing reinforcement in those countries.
Okay, so I have to go out. I think let's call it a day. I want to propose that we should have another engagement before we arrive. I'm not sure what are the issues that I did raise, you managed to respond to them. But I think there is a lot more that we need to discuss. Particularly on what is the end game? What, after all these things, what are we going to say? You may need information that will support that decision, the studies and so forth. But maybe let me just make a few things very clear from where we are. We support the South Africa's position on sustainable use of the natural resources. We don't subscribe to non-consumptive use because that is not part of what has been decided for our country as a policy position embedded in the Constitution. So there we support. None of us as members of the committee have called for the review of that. So for us, we think that it's something that is the cornerstone of our approach to conservation in the country. So I thought I must just make that statement clear because the DDGOs worried about people who want to ban everything or trade. Of course, there is something that will always come, but I doubt if it can be elevated to a point where scientists will take that decision, because it's going to be detrimental to the conservation effort, especially in the red state. So it's going to be bad if that decision can be taken. But I think we need to find a way of resolving this, because the fact that there is a legal market, the fact that there was a fight in the right approach means that there is demand somewhere. So we need to discuss this and say ultimately what is going to happen. And of course, that decision then needs to be engaged with the scientists, so that finally scientists can take a decision on that issue, because it may even help in redirecting the resources away from putting in more resources in the security measures to guard the rhinos. Because if there is an illegal market, I'm sure also the price is determined on the unavailability of this product. So it's more risky to get the product, and I'm sure even the price will go up. I don't know in the illicit market how much is the, what is the price of the rhino or the kilogram.
Why you been checking this?
Because the price therefore gets determined also in a
blue market,
those dynamics of the illicit market. That's why I was saying before that it's quite a sensitive issue, but the sooner the country develops a position, the better for us to be able to move forward. So that's why I'm suggesting that we need to have a follow-up engagement. But you know, you are breaking protocol. When the chair throws somewhere else.
Maybe it's for the future, something that maybe they will discuss it in the future.
Sir, I was setting a wrong
precedent. You also wanted to say something. Thank you very much, Chef. I forgot to mention this. I heard that you are also monitoring the airports. What about the seaports? Because they might be used as a gateway for wildlife trading to thrive. Are you looking at that as well? Maybe in future, if you can respond.
Yeah, I think the bust that happened was in 2013 in Hong Kong. We got it through the harbour. It was cargo that went through the water transport to Hong Kong. A big contingent of elephant tusks and rhino horn. So, but I do take the point that the region we perhaps need to intensify it. We're looking at it in three dimensions. It's the air, your water transport monitoring, and then the land monitoring transport. Because across those five levels, they engage different movement mechanisms. So you need to take the point and perhaps you can intensify it equally across all the areas.
Okay, so yeah. So I think we will do that. I must say that I remain unconvinced by some of the responses from the
end of the
period. Okay, so I'm concluding. I'll say that I'm not convinced by it.
Now it's off the record now.
By some of the responses that we get from the department, particularly on policy legislation, it's one of the areas that was recommended by the article. I think that the current legislative environment does not provide sufficient instruments to fight with the climate pollution. And we have made specific proposals about what needs to be done about the state of the investigation. And every time that I can say
presentation about regulation that can touch on us or can touch on us, but nothing fundamental that can talk to that area of response to crime and pollution. And I'm worried about this. I think it's something that we can also look into in time and propose what it is that we can, do about it. About introducing a carrot, instead of a carrot to the prisoner. We keep on speaking about it every time on all the platforms, but looks like we're not doing it. So that is something that I would also persuade ourselves about it. But otherwise, we're happy that the numbers are going down. It's still in the thousands. So it's, there's still more animals being killed, the rhinos. But at least the numbers are going down, and I think we must congratulate you for the numbers that are going down. And we must keep on doing the, good work to a point where the numbers can come down. But we don't know what makes the numbers come down. I don't know whether it's showing it. We don't know what makes the numbers go down. Is it the effort that we are putting in Kruger and other areas, or is the demand coming down? But what we know is that the activities going up and many people, criminals are getting caught before they commit the act and so forth. But as I say, ultimately we need to find a solution to this problem. But anyway, thank you very much. We will send you a follow up and then we will then indicate what are the areas that you want us to engage with. So that brings us to the end of our meeting today. Thank you very much, the team. But you didn't give the opportunity to the lady next to you to say something. All the way from Victoria to Cape Town, not to say you must speak, I don't want to speak. But anyway, thank you very much for making such a... On the lifespan at the restaurant, that's wrong.
Lucky. Thank you.